The Don Lee Network presents another interesting quarter-hour visit with Hollywood's favorite Mr. and Mrs. In case you don't know who I mean, just listen.
Nitty, night, come on.
Coming, Mother.
Okay.
How's that? Sound like Henry Aldridge.
Yes, it certainly does.
I was back in the backyard again. I'm glad to see the patio's finished at last, eh?
Yes, we're visiting Benny Barnes and her husband Mike Frankovich at home in Beverly Hills. In just a moment, we'll join Benny and Mike in another over-the-coffee chit-chat. But first, a word from your local announcer. And now, here are Benny and Mike.
Good morning, the bees are humming.
Wait a minute. I think we're on the air. Olive, bring me some coffee, please.
Oh, I was singing. Don't you know that song?
Good morning. I couldn't tell.
The bees are humming.
You feel pretty good. Do I have to feel that good?
Oh, yes, you have to.
You know, someone said to me, do you feel that good every morning? And I had to tell them the truth. I don't. And
well,
I don't feel too good this morning.
Why, what's the matter?
I thought I was going to get rid of this cold, and here I wake up with a coat in my nose.
Well, all I ask you is not to go near the children, dear.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. You know, the children come home today, and they're going to be home for the whole weekend, and Sunday I'd plan to take them down to the beach and kind of look around because it's going to be good weather over the weekend, you know.
I know it is, but you can't go to the beach Saturday because they have a play at school, dear.
Well, it's a funny thing, you know. I went out to the druggist near the studio, and I'm not going to mention these pills or what kind they are, but the druggist said, here's a bottle of pills, funny pills in it, and if you take 2-5 times a day for 2 days, it'll cure your cold. So I took them all day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And now if I complete the day today, I think it'll cure my cold. And he said, take the bottle. It costs $1.39. And if it doesn't cure your cold, you don't owe me anything.
What a trusting soul, dear.
He is. And he's not making any profit, extra profit on it, because it's not a black market deal or anything. He says, if it cures your cold, come in and pay me for it.
Well, what does he get out of the deal?
He doesn't get anything. He just wants to use me as an ad, probably. And if I get the cold cured, I might mention that it's Dalapana's brand, you know.
Well,
you know what kind of a brand that is, don't you?
Well, really? Well, does your cold feel any better from it?
No. It feels much better now, but it isn't cured yet. As you can probably tell, I'm a little nasal.
Well, you sound all right to me. Have some coffee. Do you want hot cakes, or what would you like this morning?
Yes, I'll have some hot cakes this morning with a little crisp bacon and fry it real well, you know.
All right, well, did you tell
Olive? I mean, almost burn it. Tell Olive to burn that Swift's premium bacon, how I love it.
All right, Olive! Bacon for the boss! Cooked good!
That always kills me, and it always kind of gets me under the skin a little bit. All the women say that.
What? Say
bacon
what?
Bacon for the boss, and it gets me good.
Why?
And all the characters that I know all pretend like they're the bosses, too. And after all, when it comes down to a family situation, who is the boss, really?
Well, I don't know. I think you are, darling. I don't think anybody else is the boss in this house,
yeah,
really
most,
and truly.
The most successful women. Yes, I know. The most successful women, of course, are the women who make their husband think that he is the boss. Yes, he's the boss. He's going to do this and he's going to do that. And they usually do what they want to do after their wife has told them to do it.
Well, I think that's a very good idea, anyway.
Yes, it's
and
a very good
incidentally,
idea.
Incidentally, will you go out to the garage and see if you can find the cat?
Go out where?
To the garage and see if you can find the cat. I just saw a mouse run by the service porch.
I'll go right out to the garage. Yes, of course, I'll be right back. But one little mouse won't hurt you, you know. How would you like to live in the melee where they're having a plague of mice at the moment?
Where on earth is Malay?
Well, the Malay is the wheat section of southeastern Australia, and it's about 4,000 square miles, and it's been devastated by mice. I thought probably you knew about that. And,
no.
They've devastated thousands of dollars worth of wheat, and all kinds of produce have been destroyed down there.
How frightful. Sounds like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, where the rats followed the piper out of town. Why, I didn't even know that these plagues really happened.
Oh, sure they do. And don't you tell the children that they don't, you know. History has been told many, many times in the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Remember the rat plague in Hamelin? And, of course, the Australian farmers can remember two similar mouse plagues that they had and within the last 60 years, too. The mice down there, for instance, have eaten wallpaper and lampshades and clothing and letters about to be posted and everything else, and now they're getting to where they're eating each other.
Oh,
this is a supposed to be a sign that the plague is lessening or almost over.
Oh, you're beginning to make my flesh creep and my hair stand on end. Gee, I hope we never have one of those plagues here.
Your hair stand on end?
Did you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
Yes.
Well, there's one funny story. One funny story has come out of this. The mice ate the wooden leg of a man called David Strachan. I mention his name only because he's many thousand miles away and because it proves the story partially. It appears that he was in the habit of taking the leg off every night and kind of propping it up on a chair by his bedside. And each morning he noticed that there were little marks the mice had been nibbling at, and didn't worry him too much, and until they ate so much around the ankle that it was almost cut through, and he was afraid to put the leg on. And he was afraid it might collapse under him or something.
Oh, that's not funny. I'm scared of death. You'd better run for Smokey and get rid of that mouse quick.
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And while you're gone, I'm going to give out three very good quick recipes I've come across.
The next noise you hear will be that of my chair backing up.
Oh, Mitchie, really? You do that all the time on this breakfast in this breakfast room, and you ruin the cloth every time you do it, dear. Will you please lift it up when you move away from the breakfast table?
There's no more cloth under where my chair's been sliding.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll give my recipe out. It's a very good one. The first dish is cream tuna pie. You line a dish with pastry and brown in the oven. Then you let it cool. Now take a can of tuna and a can of mushroom soup and mix them together. Throw into the pie crust and heat in the oven. With two cans and a package of prepared pastry, mix, you have a delicious dinner for unexpected company.
Well,
dear?
Yeah, I got back. You know what I should have done? I should have stayed out there and made you go on for a long, long time, because it's 23 and a half minutes of 9, and I should have let you go on for 23 and a half minutes and gone out and listened to the program on the air in the garage. I should have done it out there, and we'd have had a big time. You
I'm
on the
about
air.
About to bop you over the head, my fine feathers friend, at this time in the morning. Have some more coffee. Did you get rid of Smokey?
You know, grammatically speaking, and as a student of literature, do you know what fine-feathered friend represents?
No, do
you? That is called in literature a phrase of alliteration.
Oh, really?
It reminds me of a phrase from Idylls of the King. Lynette, I think it was. Lancelot Millet, her nose was tip-tilted like the petal of a flower. See, tip-tilted. Fine-feathered friend. You get the idea?
Oh, you're wonderful.
Phrase of alliteration.
Oh, you're
incidentally,
great.
While I was out in the garage, I put Smokey to work, and she seems to be doing all right. But did you know that there's a whole brood out there? Did
I
you
know
mention
she
it?
Had five kittens the other day, and I don't know what the children are going to all do with them. There's two white ones that are rather cute. I'd like to keep those. They're awful.
You're not going to keep them now.
Yes, I am. I like
Listen,
the cats.
You've got a dog and a cat, and you've got a bird upstairs, and me. Now, how many more serpents do you want around?
I have two dogs with you, dear.
Oh, dear. Now, let's keep it clean. The FCC might object. Anyway, I heard the last part of your recipe, and it sounds kind of good. When are we going to have it?
Well, I...
What was it first? Let's go back to
no,
it.
No, I'm not going to tell All you right. anymore. The next time the cook's out and I'm in a frantic hurry, these recipes today are for emergencies like that.
They are.
And I want to tell my listeners that a can of mushroom soup used just as it comes from the can makes a perfect cream sauce.
Camel soup, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So why fiddle around with cream sauces when you can use this? Throw small cooked onions into the cream sauce, and you have a delicious vegetable, creamed onions, and you can also use peas and so on the same way, you know. You just have
well, you're making me hungry already, even though I'm having pancakes and coffee this morning. And I'm glad you agreed with me that camel soup, because how I loved Amos and Andy. When they come on, they kingfisher and things like that.
Do well, Amos and Andy good. For me.
See here, buddy.
Well, Andy, I tell you.
Well, that's not good. It's not bad anyway. Say, how about telling them about the grilled tomatoes that you fix? You know, that's something that I really like, especially with steak.
Well, the easiest thing in the world. You just cut the tomatoes in half.
The what?
The tomatoes
yes.
in half. You spread with mayonnaise and sprinkle with grated cheese. You shove it under the grill and you brown it.
You do what?
You shove it under the grill. Or you put it under the grill and you brown it. and watch them carefully so they don't overbrown. Oh, they only take a few minutes to do.
Now, that would be very funny for the Joey Browns, wouldn't it? Not to overbrown.
Oh, Mitchie. You know, that's awful.
I guess it's bad. Jack is laughing at it. Imagine having to sit here for a half an hour with Jack Fredericks at the controls. He's slumming this morning. You know that, don't you?
Wasn't he a big football star at one time?
He's big right now, and he was a big football star, too. Of course, everybody knows Jack. Jack was one of our college mates out at UCLA and also one of our professional, shall I say, stars as well as moguls. You know what a mogul is.
No, tell me. Explain a mogul. I'd like to know what a mogul is.
A mogul has two references. Usually a fellow that runs a club or an outfit or a fellow who puts up the money. Regardless of which you prefer, he's still the mogul or kind of the boss man of an outfit. And Jack has been very instrumental in creating a great deal of interest in professional football in Southern California.
So moguling things around a little, in other words.
No, that wasn't very good. But anyway, getting back, that got me off on a tangent again. Professional football, you know, is going to have a big year out here. I have an idea that we're going to have our local clubs again, are we, Jack? Just kind of give me the okay. Yes, we're going to have local clubs again, and then there's the Rams and the Dons. And with all the stars that they're digging up, it's certainly going to be a terrific year from
where
a
they
professional
digging them up
football
from?
Standpoint. Not digging them up, I mean signing them. You know,
I see, yeah.
They've signed a lot of stars. Incidentally, when I was talking to some of the boys the other night at that testimonial dinner for Bill Spaulding, I noticed that I brought up the subject of several of the stars that the Los Angeles Rams have signed, and it's my understanding that there have been a couple of football players who have not been announced by the Los Angeles Rams. One, for instance, Jerry Cowig, the great Notre Dame fullback that we mentioned some time ago. And several times, Dan Reeves, I understand Reeves has announced at public gatherings that he doesn't want to divulge the name of a man who has also been signed, who is a fullback. And he said, all I can tell you, fellas, is that he played against Michigan and Notre Dame and was the best fullback in the Midwest. Well, by simple deduction, I put two and two together and imagined that it might be a fella from Iowa. So if some of the other fellas want to do a little more detectiving, they might find out who the fella is. A fullback from Iowa will play with the Los Angeles Rams. And I predict, as Drew Pearson says.
Yes, I think it's wonderful. What else do you predict in the sports front, old boy?
Getting off the sports front, may I?
Oh, get off any place you want, dear. Be delighted. Yeah. Take a bus.
Give me a transfer. Here's an interesting item in Time magazine. Do you ever read Time?
Once in a while. I pick it up when I've got the time.
Yeah, it's about a New York clam digger named Cornelius J. Brone. I don't know whether it's Brone or Breen. It's B-R-O-E-N-E, and he doesn't tell us how to pronounce his name, so my apologies if it happens to be incorrect.
Granted.
What was that?
I said granted.
Oh, granted, yes. Anyway, Cornelius is suing the government for $2,000, or a little more, as a matter of fact, $2,133, which is the money he discovered in the pockets of a dead man that he picked up in Great South Bay.
Was there any chance of his getting it? I should have thought that this would have belonged to the government if the man had no relatives.
Well, he's got the lawyers in a stew there. Cornelius bases his action or his claim to it on a novel legal theory that he's figured out. And he says that towing a floating corpse to shore is as much a salvage operation as towing an abandoned ship to safety or something like that.
Oh, do they get money for that, too?
Well, of course, under certain conditions, and I haven't got time to go into that now, dear, but anyhow, the subject of things thrown into or brought in by the sea is very interesting, and I'll go into that with you someday.
This is Mike turning it over to my
And this is Benny saying goodbye until tomorrow at 8:30.